Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow-up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and we're bringing you a kind of short episode today, but that's because we wanted to cover updates to a couple of things we've talked about this year.
That's right. Stuff to Blow Your Mind is primarily a show about science, of course, but we also discuss history, philosophy, mythology, various other subjects on the show. But of course, we do so with science as the bedrock. And science, as we frequently discussed, is perpetually in a state of change. It's that slime mold working its way through the maze of reality. And so pretty much nothing that we record is guaranteed to be evergreen, as they say in the, you know, the publishing world.
Well, sure. It's the kind of funny irony is that science is probably – it's the best tool we have for understanding reality, but it's very rarely the final word because Right. It's all – you know, we're always getting a better idea.
It's one of the reasons I cringe when people talk about starting the podcast back from the beginning from 10 years ago. I mean, part of it is like when we started out, like we didn't really know what we were doing. But then also, you know, it's like the science changes. Like there's an older episode on Neanderthals. Mm-hmm. And I don't really recommend anyone listen to that because there's been so many more studies about Neanderthals since the publication of that episode. I don't trust the science to be 100% accurate or to be the best version of our understanding.
Well, I hope the way we approach things now, we try to make episodes at least partially evergreen, baking in the idea that, you know, results are tentative. The outcome of one study is not the answer forever. You know, things in the future could upend it.
Oh, absolutely. I do think we do that. But yeah, today's episode is going to be about doing a little upkeep on a couple of – well, one is a recent episode or a pair of episodes from this year. Another is an older episode from 2017 that we also recently reran back in October. Mm-hmm. And of course, the main thing too is that both of these are exciting topics where new findings can kind of change the way we understand – the cosmos or understand the history of humanity.
Yeah, and I guess also both of these findings have to do with primacy, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, let's go straight into the first one. And this concerns the episode that we recorded, I guess it was a couple of years ago and then reran, about the idea of the first monster.
Yeah, back in 2017, we recorded an episode of Stuff to Blow Your Mind titled The First Monster. And again, we reran it in this most recent October. But in the episode, we discussed the Lion Man or the Lohenmensch, which was this this figure that resembled that was a human with a lion's head, a hybrid being combining animal and human likeness into a single likeness.
Yeah.
Now this was this particular artifact, the Löwenmensch, was discovered in 1939 at a Stone Age cave site known as Stadelhole or Stable Cave at Hohlenstein near Vogelherd in Germany. But it would be another 30 years before anyone got a chance to examine these broken pieces of ivory due to the World Wars. But eventually, 30 years later, that's when German archaeologist Joachim Hahn discovered that these 200 fragments came together to form a 31-centimeter, or just over a foot-long, figure, carbon-14 dated to between 35 and 40,000 years old. It had the body of a man and the head of a lion. In 2003, another lion man was discovered in southwestern Germany. This one was carbon dated to around the same time period. And by some estimates, you know, first of all, these are amazing just for no other reason. They're just fascinating figures that that give us some insight into what ancient people were doing and what they were making. But they also seemed to be the oldest examples of figurative art. You know, we've seen the Venus of Hohlfels take the title before. I think it's from 35,000 to 40,000 years ago, discovered in 2008 and 2016. But, you know, while the Venus is the depiction of the feminine form, the Löwenmensch is a human fused with the beast.
Yeah, and this is what we were drawing attention to in the episode, the idea that this is the earliest example that we knew about of fantasy art. It is an imagined being.
Yeah. As stated by Clive Gamble, an archaeologist at the University of Southampton, UK, as quoted in Nature, quote, "They depict an animal world in a semi-realistic way. It shows early man moving from his immediate world to an imaginative world." So that's just a brief breakdown of the Löwenmensch. Certainly go back and listen to that episode that we did if you want more on that topic. But here's the cool thing, and I imagine a number of you have caught this news already because it was covered in a number of places. I even saw it featured on Stephen Colbert's show.
Oh.
But in December of 2019, a new discovery was made, and it might just blow the Lion Man and the Venus out of the water.
This is so cool.
Yeah. So this story takes us to a different corner of the world. It takes us to Sulawesi, Indonesia, one of the four greater Sunda Islands, and it's actually the world's 11th largest island, I read. So we've known about Pleistocene settlements in the area for quite some time, and early Homo sapiens are known to have reached this area between 60,000 and 45,000 years ago. Previous studies from some of the same archaeologists involved in this particular find, which is the Arch team out of Australia, they've revealed prehistoric art and ornaments dating back 30,000 to 22,000 years ago in this area, and Homo sapiens apparently made it here again sometime prior to 50,000 years ago. So here's how this new finding came about. In 2017, a spelunker named Hamrula climbed into a previously uncharted chamber in a Sulawesi cave system known as Meros Pankep. It's a limestone cave system. And while he was there performing a government survey of the caves.
Yeah. And if you're wondering, was Hamrula his first name or his last name? Apparently, a lot of people in Indonesia just go by one name.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just the one name. Anyway, he crawls through a narrow space into this new chamber, and he discovers cave paintings. And the cave paintings were subsequently examined and written about by Aubert et al. In Earliest Hunting Seen in Prehistoric Art, published December 2019 in Nature. And again, I believe this is the same Arch team out of Australia that was involved in some previous studies in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So as the title implies, they used some dating technology, uranium series dating on cave popcorn or mineral deposits that they're hanging over some of the motifs in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to date this hunting scene back to at least 43,900 years ago. So that is 20,000 years older than the hunting scene on the walls of Francis Lascaux Caves. And coming back to the Löwenmensch, that's also 4,000 years before the Lion Man. And I realize we're talking about such it's kind of ironic that we're talking about such big periods of time, mm-hmm. such large portions of human history, that it can also make 4,000 years not seem like a lot,
right.
which is bizarre. But obviously, 4,000 years is a lot of time, and to set the record back 4,000 years is amazing. So here's an important caveat, though. there's more work to do is they need to date not just the work overall, you know, looking at the cave popcorn, but each figure individually before we can be 100% certain in all of this, because there's ultimately the possibility that different portions of it have been added at different times.
Yes. Now, the main archaeologists were quoted saying they don't think that's the case.
Right.
But yeah, we certainly should date the different parts. I think the parts that have been dated so far are just the regular animals. Mm-hmm. But the more interesting part, let's get into that.
So yes, overall it depicts what seem to be individuals using spears against prey animals in a hunt. And this would be, on its own, would be an amazing find, right? It would predate any hunting scene we've seen before. But on top of this, some of the hunters appear to be what the researchers refer to as therianthropes, or animal-human hybrids, much like the Lowenmensch.
Yeah.
As some of the humans appear to have tails or snouts.
Right. So if this is correct, if the now again, the parts that have been dated already were overlapping just the animals that were being hunted,
right,
which were these like buffalo type creatures and pigs.
Yeah, wild pigs, and then a type of buffalo called an Anoa, which is also known as a midget buffalo. So it's like a water buffalo except smaller.
Okay. So I think they haven't dated the other figures like the therianthropes or the human animal hybrids, mm-hmm, yet, but it looks like they're probably from the same period. We're just not certain about that.
Yeah.
But if so, this would probably predate the Lowenmensch, making this the earliest evidence we have of fantastical thinking, of like magic thinking among humans, showing human-animal hybrids, like a human hunting a buffalo with a bird's beak.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. And we get into it in that episode about the first monster, about what this means, right? Like what ultimately does it mean to have in your mind a human with a beast's head?
Yeah.
You know, on one hand, it is imagining something that does not exist in the real world. But then on a deeper level, it is taking what this means. What does a bird mean? What are the ideas that just the mere symbol of a bird summons?
Mm-hmm.
And then our idea, too, of a human being. What happens when this mix of symbols and meanings collide? What new ideas are born out of that collision?
Absolutely.
So it basically shows that people from this time period of, you know, 4,000 years earlier than we thought may have been dealing with this kind of complex thinking, mashing up of symbols, ideas, and concepts even taking on a humanoid form.
Mm-hmm.
Becky Ferreira wrote an excellent piece on this for the New York Times. And, you know, she points out in this that the researchers believe, too, that these may have been animal spirit helpers, something that you would commonly find in shamanistic beliefs. So, yeah, there's a possibility that we're dealing with, animism and shamanism, mm-hmm, here.
Right. It looks like it could be – again, this is just interpretation, but it looks like it could be a scene depicting maybe a game drive,
yep,
where hunters are shown driving prey animals into an ambush by other hunters, but that some of the hunters appear to be human, others appear to be human-animal hybrids. So that means they could be depicting, yeah, like these otherworldly spirit helpers that come in to aid the humans in the hunt.
Right. Like, well, even if they are depictions of humans dressed up as animals or partial animals,
uh-huh,
they would have engaged in an actual, like, literal rite. Like, even that would reveal the idea that this kind of complex thinking is possible.
Totally, yeah.
Now, the researchers also note that these paintings are quite fragile and the art is fading, quote, at an alarming rate and for unknown reasons.
Mm.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops further, because it does seem like there is a, you know, there's a half-life in play here. And it's kind of a question of how much can we figure out about them before the work is degraded.
Yeah. And it also makes you wonder about how much other wonderful art from the prehistoric world is just already lost and we'll never see it.
Yeah.
But
on the optimistic side, how many more caverns like this are there out in the world that just haven't been breached or haven't been breached in a terribly long time?
Yeah. That's really exciting. All right, I think we should take a quick break, but we'll be right back with another update.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Guess what, Bango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene. I've lost out on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back.
So this update follows up on our previous podcasts about the first interstellar visitor, the first object from another star outside our solar system, which is known as Oumuamua. And so a brief refresher on Oumuamua before we get into the updates on it. So on October 19th, 2017, the Pan-STARRS 1 telescope in Hawaii first registered a small, previously uncatalogued object zooming through the solar system. They got other observatories to confirm it. And due to the trajectory of the object, it was clear that this thing was not orbiting the sun like everything else we see in the solar system is. Instead, it was slingshotting around the sun, coming in from outside the sun's gravitational influence. And it seemed like it was probably a rocky object that somehow got ejected from another star system in the galaxy. And there were a lot of reasons that this thing was very interesting. So I'll just run through a few of its attributes real quick. There was its speed. When it made its nearest approach to the sun around September 9th of 2017, it was going 196,000 miles per hour, or about 87.3 kilometers per second. And by the time we had this information, Oumuamua was already going. It was like gone. You know, yeah. It was already headed back out of the solar system at like 70,000 miles per hour, already past the orbit of Jupiter. In another 4 years, it's going to be past the orbit of Neptune. It's just going to be gone. It's just going off into interstellar space.
It's like the flyby had been completed.
Yeah. It had already passed its nearest point by the time we saw it. Mm-hmm. So the trajectory was very weird. It entered the plane of the solar system, the ecliptic plane, at an inclination of like 123 degrees, or sort of coming straight down from above or up from below, however you want to think about it. It passed inside the orbit of Mercury, slingshotted around the sun, then went back out. So, we are ships passing in the night. We are never going to see Oumuamua again. Now, one of the things that really captured people's attention about it was its strange shape. Oumuamua is so small and so far away that it appears as a point-like object on our telescopes, and that means we can't directly see any details about the surface or the shape of the object. But, of course, there are ways of analyzing it to draw some conclusions about its shape and surface features. Like, we can study the variations in the flickering brightness of the object to create what's known as a light curve analysis. Basically, this analyzes patterns of light intensity from this point-like object in order to draw conclusions about its shape and its spin and stuff. And when we did that, what scientists found is that it appears to have something like a 10-to-1 length to width and depth ratio. So you can imagine a cylindrical or tube-shaped object like 10 times longer than it is wide. According to NASA, it could be up to about a quarter mile long, maybe like 400 meters and only about 40 meters wide. Also, its motion is not spinning the way you might expect it to be, but it's tumbling. So it's not rotating around a principal axis. It's got a chaotic tumbling pattern, tumbling once every like 7.5 hours or so.
So it's like a tumbling cigar.
Yeah, often characterized as a cigar. And it looks like its surface may have a red coloration, which would be consistent with objects in our solar system like asteroids that have been bombarded with cosmic rays a lot. So that's not all that surprising. But the question is, where did it come from? We don't know for sure. It has this approach trajectory that makes it look like it's roughly coming from the star Vega in the constellation of Lyra. But of course, like, Vega was not there when it would have been coming from that region. So you'd have to sort of play back the movie of stars moving around in the galaxy in order to figure out where it actually came from. So we haven't figured that out yet. And then we did a follow-up episode. Our first episode on Oumuamua was in December of 2017. Then we had an episode after that responding mainly to a paper by the Harvard physicist Avi Loeb and a co-author named Shmuel Bialy, noting this weird speed boost gained by the object as it left the solar system. It seemed to be speeding up as it was speeding away. And Loeb and Bialy argued that this boost in speed was consistent with the object being a light sail or a solar sail, which would imply an artificial origin. But I think our conclusion was, well, you know, you can't totally rule it out, but there's no really strong evidence yet that it's aliens. This is an interesting paper, but it did receive some criticism from people who said, you know, they're jumping to conclusions.
Right, right. It would be an outstanding statement to say it was aliens, and we really need outstanding evidence for that to be the statement we make.
Totally. And if it were like an alien probe, for one thing, we'd probably expect it to be emitting some kind of radio signal, right? Mm-hmm. We had some radio observatories try to listen to it and found nothing. There were no patterned radio signals at all. So there's no indication that it was aliens, really, except for this interesting thing about it speeding up as it moved away, which could have also been due to radiation pressure if it had certain other attributes, but they were saying it didn't have the attributes that would make it, you know, the kind of object that would have been powered away by the solar radiation.
Now, I remember us talking about the possibility that it was an out-of-control dead ship. that if there was any kind of life force around on board it, or even a will or a purpose, that it had all been eradicated a long time ago. So
sure.
It's essentially the ship from Alien tumbling through the galaxy.
Yeah, which would be great. But even the ship in Alien was emitting a distress
That's
beacon,
true.
Which
yes.
We would have detected. But yeah, who knows? I like to stay in the realm of can't totally rule it out, but won't go there.
Right. And again, we'll also never know because it's gone. All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with the update.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential and then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Guess what, Bango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jill. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. So one of the weirdest things about Oumuamua was its apparent shape. It was this extremely elongated cigar shape that was inferred from this light curve analysis. Obviously, that figured into a lot of the speculation about alien probes and so forth, right? You know, you see a cigar-shaped object in space. That's not normal. Most objects are not shaped that way. So people wanted to say, oh, yeah, that's got to be some kind of probe. Are we sure that that's what we're looking at? Are we sure that it is this cigar-shaped rocky object like we've been assuming? I came across some interesting reports about a paper that offered a different way of interpreting the data about the geometry. And so this is a more recent development that's from a scientist. I'm sorry, I'm going to do my best to pronounce his name. It's Dr. Zdeněk Sekanina. And Sekanina is a Czech-American astronomer who has worked with NASA JPL for decades. A lot of his research has focused on space dust, meteors, and comets. He's actually done research on the Tunguska event, as well as Halley's Comet and the giant impact that happened on Jupiter in the 1990s, the Shoemaker-Levy comet.
Oh, yes.
So what was his take? Well, remember, humans never saw Oumuamua when it was on its approach, right, when it was coming into its perihelion with the sun. Our telescopes never picked it up until it had already slingshotted around the sun and was on its exit trajectory to leave the solar system. Now, of course, astrophysicists can still infer its total trajectory based on the small sliver of it that we see. You know, you can roughly tell where it came from. But Sekanina offers an interesting argument about Oumuamua's shape and nature. He argues that the Oumuamua we registered with our telescopes is not the original object, but rather it is a remnant, a material cosmic wraith that was left behind after an interstellar comet passed its perihelion and disintegrated in the process. So Sekanina's paper was published on the Archive preprint server in January of 2019. As always, you know, a lot of physics and astrophysics papers show up on Archive these days. But just to remind you again, that's not a peer-reviewed journal. That's just like a lot of stuff in this realm happens in those kind of places these days and just gets hashed out on the internet. So that's a preprint server, not peer-reviewed. But his analysis does seem to be interesting and from what I can tell, pretty sound. Like to read his words, he believes the evidence indicates, quote, that also surviving could be a sizable fragment resembling a devolatilized aggregate of loosely bound dust grains that may have exotic shape, peculiar rotational properties, and extremely high porosity. So weird shape, tumbling, being very porous and not very dense, devolatilized, of course, because as it passed close to the sun, it lost all of its volatile molecules like water and stuff, and all that stuff would get turned to gas or vaporized, gassed out, and released. And then what you'd have behind is this object, this collection of dust grains. So to continue with his words, so that was all acquired, quote, in the course of the disintegration event. Given that the brightness of Oumuamua's parent could not possibly equal or exceed the Bortle survival limit, and I'll get back to that with Mr. Bortle, there are reasons to believe that it suffered from the same fate as do the frail comets. The post-perihelion observations then do not refer to the object that was entering the inner solar system in early 2017, as is tacitly assumed, but to its debris. So here, when he mentions Bortle, the Bortle limit, he's referring to existing research by the American amateur astronomer John E. Bortle showing that faint comets with very elongated orbits that pass within one Earth distance from the sun will usually tend to shatter right before the closest part of their orbit with the sun. Quote, the object is a desiccated comet that lost most of its water and gases when it swooped close to the sun. It's like a skeleton of the original body with all the ice out. Sekanina also writes that consistent with what we've seen in a couple of other frail comets that shattered like this when they passed close to the sun, quote, as a monstrous fluffy dust aggregate released in the recent explosive event, Oumuamua should be of strongly irregular shape,
tumbling, not outgassing, and subjected to the effects of solar radiation pressure consistent with observation. So he's basically saying, like, an object like this that came close to the sun sort of blew apart because it was getting heated up by the sun as it was passing around, suffered this disintegration event, and then continued to fly on as this remnant piece. It would match all of the stuff we've seen so far, including the stuff that that Avi Loeb was talking about with it being subjected to the effects of solar radiation pressure, which would help it speed up as it made its way out of the solar system. Now, there's one. So if Sekenina is correct, one implication is that if such a shattering occurred, and if we don't know exactly when it occurred, this complicates our attempts to locate the origin of the object, right? As best I can tell, like, it still looks like it probably came from outside the solar system, but it makes it harder to pinpoint, like, which other star it could have come from if at some point it, like, shattered and exploded and started tumbling. And now the part of its path that we can see is only after that happened.
Does it complicate the idea that it could have been a spaceship? Does it help people out if they really want it to be a spaceship, or is this this hurt their case?
If Sekenina is correct, I think it is definitely not a spaceship. This would pretty much completely rule that out, unless it was a spaceship that was made of the stuff that comets are usually made of.
So you're saying there's a chance.
So is Sekenina right? We're not sure yet. I love the idea of this object as like this tumbling spindle of dust grains held together by gravity left over after a comet kind of exploded or disintegrated from passing close to the sun. There's actually one more development in Oumuamua news that I also thought was interesting. So in the wake of the discovery of Oumuamua, some astronomers postulated that maybe it's just that interstellar objects are traveling through our solar system all the time. They're much more common than we thought. You know, maybe that's why we're seeing this.
Yeah, the idea being that we're just reaching the point where we have the capabilities to observe these things. And if that's the case, this is not going to be just the singular interstellar traveler. We will start seeing more of them, not because they're suddenly occurring. The idea is they've been occurring all along, but we are suddenly at a point where we can observe them.
Right. So it's not that it's super rare. It just happened to be the first one we caught with our telescopes. Well, now it appears that Oumuamua is not alone in being confirmed as an interstellar object. I was just reading a good Nat Geo article by Michael Greshko from October of 2019 about the discovery of another confirmed interstellar object called Borisov. This was discovered on August 30th, 2019 by a Crimean amateur astronomer named Gennady Borisov. And unlike Oumuamua, Borisov was caught before its perihelion, so there is a chance that it could answer some questions that Oumuamua left open. So far, it appears to be pretty similar to comets from within our solar system, which is interesting. So maybe a comet from another star actually looks a lot like comets from our own solar system. Early analysis revealed it was spitting out a lot of cyanide as it traveled, but apparently local comets do that as well. It appears to have a pretty normal cometary core, a solid nucleus within a cloud of gas and dust, and the earlier estimates put the core somewhere between like half a mile and 2 miles wide, so like 0.8 to 3.2 kilometers. That was in October. Borisov actually passed its perihelion in early December of 2019. So I was reading some of the recent reports about these observations. There was a NASA news feature that had images created by the Hubble Space Telescope of the object as it was near the sun. I've got these here for you, Robert. It looks suitably haunting.
Yes, it does.
Its chemical composition appears to be, again, roughly the same as comets inside our solar system. And we got a better idea of exactly what its size was. Hubble came up with the accurate figure of about 3,200 feet or about 975 meters across for the nucleus, which, you know, is roughly a kilometer or so. So very cool. Maybe we're going to start seeing these things all the time.
Yeah, it's kind of like a revelation that is at once amazing, but also maybe in some ways a little I'm not going to say terrifying. I don't want to say that, but it is like this is like space exploration in general, the perpetual understanding of a larger cosmos. And the more that we understand, the more new questions we have about how everything works. It's going to be interesting to see how just the next year of observation pans out. You know, will we see more interstellar objects? And if so, how many? You know, ultimately, like, what is going to be the realistic rate of interstellar objects passing through our solar system?
Yeah, I don't know. But I can't wait to find out.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get some really weird ones. I guess if there's anything disappointing here, I mean, I love this discovery. But if we're seeing, okay, so a comet from another star looks very much like, at least so far, like comets from our own neighborhood, when do we get a super weird one? When do we get one that, I don't know, you know, comes from a star made out of mice or something?
Right, right. I mean, it takes me back to our recent episode discussing New Horizons and Pluto, you know, and how there's always that that risk that the thing that you want to study will be kind of boring. But you know, oftentimes the universe has weirdness in store for us.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what kind of weirdness we see.
I think maybe one thing we've learned from doing the show is that even if something looks maybe kind of boring at first, if you look at it deep enough, it gets weird.
It does. It definitely gets weird. All right. So there you have it. Again, just a couple of updates on some past episodes. We may do more of these in the future. We'll see. But we, you know, I think we are in the – we're recording this before the new year. I think this is what, the first episode of the new year?
I'm not sure.
Maybe so. So if it is, happy new year. If not, you know – I guess just happy Tuesday or Thursday, but in either case, we are looking forward to bringing you a lot of new episodes in 2020. We're looking forward to getting into a lot of weird topics, and yeah, we're looking forward to the journey, and we hope you'll stick with us through that journey. In the meantime, if you head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com, that'll shoot you over to a place where you can find episodes of the show, and you can find episodes of the show wherever you get podcasts these days. You know, whichever one feels like the best fit for you personally, I guess. And whatever that website happens to be, make sure that you subscribe and rate and review, because that helps the show out in the long run.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you'd like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special mom in your life. And what better way than with the Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets that are perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their advanced eye care duo brightens, awakens, and firms the skin around your eyes, while the golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths the skin all over. Both sets are packaged in giftable boxes. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. And the best part? For a limited time, you can save up to $46 on Osea's sets. Plus, get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. This Mother's Day, get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off site-wide.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and How do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.